This time on Vet Story. Do you think it's gone too far with respect to the roughing the passer rule?
Hail to the Redskins.
Is these men are so big and this game happens so fast that you really have to be in the arena and be on the field. Operation Iraqi Freedom, we were the second wave that went in. You know, things were going okay, and then about the first month that we were in there, we lost an aircraft, and that's when the hostilities really started to pick up. I mean, when it becomes a two-way range, it's obviously a little bit different story. I just had the opportunity to provide close air support for the guys on the ground.
You know, the problem with last year's game, Coach, was you guys went with the 10th Mountain uniforms, and I don't think we could see you.
Yeah, camouflage. Whether it's in the Army or in the football world and here at the highest level at the NFL, you know, you're still dealing with people. You're still mentoring, coaching, and teaching.
Welcome to another episode of Vet Story. I'm your host, Phil Briggs, a Navy veteran and a proud football fan. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I'll tell all my friends in, say, Dallas, Texas, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, San Francisco, California. I'm a Washington Redskins fan, and damn proud of it.
Beat 'em, swap 'em, touch 'em at the point score. Fight on, till you have won, sons of Washington.
I've been looking around the league to find military veterans on the ball field. And I happened to find one on the roster of my very own Redskins team. A former player. But most importantly, a former AH-64 Apache combat helicopter pilot. He's seen action in Iraq. He's seen action in Bosnia and South Korea. And he sees the action every Sunday from the sidelines in the NFL.
Coach Ben Kawika, special teams coordinator for the Washington Redskins.
Welcome to Vet Story, Coach. Really glad to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Phil. How are you?
Outstanding. And as we were just chatting there, you know, don't hold it against me. I'm Navy, but we get a rematch this year, and we're going to come at you strong. I don't think we're going to lose 3 years in a row to the Army-Navy game.
Well, it's like the Zen Master said, we'll see. It's been a good battle the last couple of years, and it's just a tremendous rivalry, and it's a really special football game that I was very, very fortunate to be a part of for a handful of years.
Yeah, and before we get into your service background, before we get into the NFL, before we get into all things with you know, the Redskins, let's chat quickly. Tell me, when did you play?
Sure. I played from 1993 through 97. So I graduated from West Point in 97.
From there on, you went on to become a lieutenant and second lieutenant and first lieutenant. Had a storied career and a great time in the Army. Tell me a little, just a couple highlights from your time in the Army.
Yeah, so after I left West Point, I was commissioned. I ended up picking aviation as my branch. I actually coached at the prep school for 6 months because I really loved the game, and Coach Sutton thought I had an aptitude for it, so I did that, and then I went to flight school, and I was a Fort Bragg guy for a few years. We did a tour in Bosnia when that was going on in 2000, came back to the States, got into a new aircraft, which was the Apache, the 64 Delta model, so we had a transition there, and then I went out to Korea for a short period of time, 13 months, and then that was in 2003, so that's when the war hit. Came back to the States, went to Fort Hood, Texas, became a company commander, and then headed out to Iraq in 2004-2005, so served there for a little over a year, and then came back to the States and got into this coaching business.
Man, so cool. And dare I say so cool and leave out the NFL, because I think to most people that listen or most people that would be Americans would think, you know, being on the field in an NFL game any given Sunday has got to be the biggest thrill. But as a Navy guy, as a veteran first, I got to say, that's amazing flying those AH-64 Apaches. What's it like laying fire down from one of those? I mean, when you're in there and you're hitting the trigger, does it? Because I was on a carrier, so when things went boom for us, they were so far off in the distance, we didn't even get the feel, except when they took off and landed. But what was it like to be in that Apache?
In that helicopter, in that airframe, in that environment in Iraq, it's a little bit more up close and personal than probably an aircraft carrier. But I was in for 8 years, and really the first 6 years, you know, that's a lot of training and such, and you know, even out in Korea. But when you get out into Iraq, there, Operation Iraqi Freedom, we were the second wave that went in with the 1st Cavalry Division. I mean, when it becomes a two-way range, it's obviously a little bit different story. I just had the opportunity to provide close air support for the guys on the ground. And, you know, that's really the way that I looked at it, is supporting the ground troops out there. And that was a huge part of the mission. And it was really a great experience to be able to work with the men and women in uniform and to provide the air support that the ground guys needed. So, it was kind of like a 1 o'clock Sunday kickoff for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, it has to be a sustained gut rush, just adrenaline pumping when you come up over the horizon and you can see, you know, a part of the battlefield that you're meant to support. I mean, that's just got to be an absolute thrill.
Yeah, and the dynamics over there during that time were up and down. You know, when we, you know, not to give a history lesson, but when we relieved the first Armor Division, you know, the op tempo there was down a little bit. You know, it was a stability operation, and really, there was a period of time where there were lulls. You know, it was a period of time where, you know, things were going okay, and then about the first month that we were in there, we lost an aircraft, and that's when the hostilities really started to pick up. So it was a little bit of a roller coaster ride up and down, and it was a very, very dynamic and unpredictable environment at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we thank you for everything you've done, and certainly, you know, we know the challenges that you faced over there were not easy. So just an incredible story to share.
Yeah, Phil, I would say the challenges weren't easy, but I'll tell you what, I was very, very fortunate to have an outstanding group of men and women that I worked with, my commanders. They were excellent. They were tremendous leaders. The men that I worked for, and then the company commanders that I worked with, who are now doing bigger and better things. Just a great group of men and women that wore the uniform, and that eased the challenge and made the mission much, much more rewarding.
Right on. And every question I have to ask my Army brethren is, what's harder, landing a helo in high winds, or you think landing a plane on a ship?
Well, if you can fly the helo in high winds, you've probably accomplished the first task, and then just to get it on the ground is the more important task. So I'll take the helo in the high winds.
Right on.
But I would like one day to try to fly one, or to land one of those aircraft on a ship. That thing would be kind of neat as well.
Yeah, I would just pick a sunny, warm day with still water. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of those days out there, right?
Right on. Hey, now transitioning to the NFL, how the hell we go from being in the world's greatest army to the NFL?
Yeah, just coming out of Iraq in 2005, finished company command and was trying to sort through some things as far as what direction, and really had a love for football. And I kept in contact with coaches who had coached me through the years. Bob Sutton, who's now the defense coordinator for Kansas City Chiefs, was instrumental, and got in touch with Bobby Ross, and he sent me an email, actually, as I was transitioning out. I was out in Doha out there, and got an email, said, hey, would you be interested? And it ended up working out. So when I got back to the States, I spent about 3 months in transition, and then before you know it, I was back at West Point coaching for a few years. So that was my first step back into football, coaching back up for Army. And then 2 years later, Coach Sutton called again, and he was the defensive coordinator for the Jets. and they were looking for a guy to help out, do the quality control work, and that was my introduction into the league, and believe it or not, 12 years later, I'm still doing it.
How did the military shape your coaching style or your mentoring style? Because you're dealing with a radically different kind of personality here, you know, a high-level athlete versus a high-level soldier. What's helped you coming out of the military?
Yeah, I think whether it's in the Army or in the football world and here at the highest level at the NFL, you know, you're still dealing with people, you're still mentoring, coaching, and teaching, you know, and I think that you deal with a vast spectrum of individuals. You know, when I was a company commander, I was in charge of, 19, 20-year-old privates and crew chiefs that were working on the aircraft, as well as, 35, 40-year-old warrant officers that had been in the Army a heck of a lot longer than, some of them, than I'd been alive. You know, so you have a wide spectrum. And it's the same thing here in the NFL, but at each spot, whether it's the Army or in the NFL, you're dealing with people that are highly competent and at the highest level of their craft. And here it's really cool to work with such great athletes and really good young men that want to accomplish a mission. And whether it's in the Army or in the NFL, you got to take a group of individuals and bring them together to accomplish a common goal. So that challenge, you know, here in the NFL each week is one that you look forward to. And, you know, the NFL is such a competitive league that, you know, you're really facing a new opponent. You know, you're facing a new opponent each week. So you're game planning and figuring out what your battle plan is going to be. And you're selling that battle plan to a group of soldiers or, you know, players to go out and accomplish the mission. So I think those are some of the parallels and some of the things that make it very, very rewarding.
That's fascinating, because I would have thought for sure you'd say it's harder to motivate an NFL player than it would have been a younger soldier, because with the NFL players, you're dealing with money and success, and, you know, a lot of them are kind of used to winning, or they come from, you know, great programs like Alabama and Michigan and Texas and, you know, these great big schools. But
here's what I would share with you there, though. For these men to get to this level, there are a lot of self-starters in that group. You just can't talent will get you to a certain to a degree, but in order to play for one of the 32, you've got to be a self-starter in your own right. So, I think that as a coach, you know, one of the things that you really try to do is what the player is looking for is, hey, how can me as a coach help them? And that's what I think I try to instill into them. Hey, listen, if you use this technique, hey, if we use this scheme, hey, if we use this fundamental, it's going to help you at the individual level, which in turn is going to help us at the collective level. So that's what you, as a coach, that you're really trying to instill into them and instruct into them. Hey, listen, if you do this, it's really going to help you. And it's really rewarding when you're able to impart that instruction and see it pay off on Sundays.
Yeah, and certainly the payoff on Sundays would be great. And I know everybody strives for the big payoff, and that is making it to the playoffs and going all the way to get the ring. And, we wish you the best there. With respect to sports, with respect to how the game has changed, talk to me a little bit about how you think the rules, like the rule changes, have affected the game. I've seen a lot of missed kicks this year, a lot of after points, like a lot of point afters that you think are just a guarantee, you know, just an ace. Yet I've seen a lot of them miss or hit the upright. Has there been a change in the way the game is structured that's causing that?
Well, I think to your first point in regard to some of the kicks, sometimes we take these guys are, many of these athletes, and what I deal with is specialists specifically, are so good at their craft, we take a 45-yard field goal for granted, sometimes, those things happen. So I don't know specifically about, missing some PATs or field goals, which happened this past weekend. Rules have changed that. But I do say that the rules have made the game safer. Just being out on the sidelines, it feels like a safer game. And for us specifically in the special teams world, is we modified the kickoff formation and the kickoff return formation to keep the play in and make it safer. Now, I don't know what the data is going to suggest, but I just feel that it's a safer play. So that that is one thing that we worked on in the off season, special teams coaches with the league and some head coaches in the competition committee, to make a refinement there where we're keeping a play in that is still exciting. There's been a couple of kickoff returns for touchdowns, but yet keeping the play safer. So the important thing is the constant communication to make the game safer. So that's where I think is, and I think that's the important thing, is the game is going to continue to evolve. It always has, but it's still a fantastic game that's very, very exciting each and every weekend.
That's cool. Are they practicing on the Division I level the same way that you guys are trying to get the tackling style to work in the NFL? Like, in other words, are they already coming to you with the knowledge and the fundamentals on how to wrap up and how to get that shoulder to the waist instead of risking any incidental helmet-to-helmet contact?
Well, I think that the NFL and the colleges and the high schools are in constant communications on various techniques. You know, we have college coaches and high school coaches in the off season here all the time. So that dialogue is continuing. So you do see the players that come to us from the college level, talking a little bit different in the techniques that they're using in regard to tackling specifically. So I just think it's still an evolution, yeah. Right? And that's going to continue to occur as we move forward. But I just feel like those rule changes that have been, again, there's going to be, anytime there's change, there's going to be some rough edges in anything that you do. And so I think the important thing is just continuing to refine it to make this game exciting and to keep it safe.
Right on. Last football-related question. A guy coming down the field, wind beneath his sails, and he's got a lot of running room to be able to tackle somebody on a kickoff is one thing. Do you think it's gone too far with respect to the quarterback and the roughing the passer rule?
One thing I would share with you is these men are so big, and this game happens so fast that in order to have an appreciation for it, you really have to be in the arena and be on the field. So I think that when we look through this lens of HDTV and multiple replays, it's easier to make that critique or criticism on a call or something. But when it happens on the field, having been there for 12 years, I can tell you that it's not an easy job. I would also suggest to you that, again, it's just a change that's occurring. So I think that in regard to tackling the quarterback, you know, we want to make the game safe. We want to keep that player safe. You just got to keep evolving and having this dialect. And we do that. We get that from the NFL officials as such with the videos that we get. So we have a continued dialogue with the NFL office just trying to make the play, make the game, exciting and to keep it safe. And one of those is keeping that player that holds the ball on every play, the quarterback, in the game, because, the game is more exciting when you have an Aaron Rodgers and a Tom Brady, and those great players staying safe and being in the game.
Staying safe, being in the game, that's all part of it. And the game is what we love to watch every Sunday. Coach, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for being first placed NFC East Washington Redskins. Let's hope we hang on to that for the weeks to come, because I've been a fan since Riggins. So,
Well, Phil, listen, I appreciate the time. And again, I appreciate you having me. And I just would like to end with telling you how much I have really enjoyed coaching here in the National Football League, but more importantly also is when I was a member of the armed services and had the opportunity to work with the Sons and Daughters of America. They are great people that are providing the freedom and the ability for me now to coach in this league, and for all the service members out there, I just want to say thank you for what you're doing. It does not go unnoticed, and it is tremendously, tremendously appreciated.
And that's why we were glad to have you on Vet Story, Coach. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Phil. Have a good one, sir.
And that, my friends, is game over. If you have a story that you'd care to share, or you got tickets to a football game, you can feel free to email me, phil@connectingvets.com. In the meantime, I'll be searching from the ball field to the battlefield to the bar stool for the next episode of Vet Story.